Giles to them. That's what they want.
They just want him.
Give them Niles, David.
They'll beat him to death.
I don't care.
Don't send me.
Get him out.
You really don't care, do you?
No, I don't.
Welcome to another presentation of Blood and Black Rum Podcast. On today's podcast, a very special episode. Today, we present Straw Dog from 1971. Another vigilante classic from the 70s.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Blood and Black Rum Podcast. I hope you enjoyed that energetic introduction from Martin. We're obviously excited about the baseball season starting soon.
Tomorrow. Starts tomorrow.
Well, tomorrow in recording time, a couple of days ago in when you're listening to this episode time. So, yeah, hopefully, and some people may not know that theme song because, you know, obviously...
You like lesser teams.
Yeah. It's just the New York Yankees theme song. But if you don't know it, yeah, that's baseball for you.
That's my best Michael Kay impression I could probably do.
Yeah, it was... I'm not going to say it's on point, but... but it worked, you know?
Well, I guess I'm not your dad then.
That's right. Yeah, you can't manage.
Your dad does a fine Kay in Sterling because your dad also has a voice for radio. So.
Yeah. And also, as you announced, we're doing Straw Dogs for 1971, and it's a good thing, too, that you pointed out that it was 1971, and it's not the, I don't know what it was, like 2000s, yeah, 2011-something remake that they did, which I guess moved the film to, like, Mississippi or something, the South. We're not doing that remake. We're doing the original, the Sam Peckinpah directed.
Which now, contractually, we are obligated to do the remake at some point.
Yeah, that's, yeah. That was kind of the idea. I think I own the remake, and I have never seen it. I think I own it.
I guess now? From what I was, a couple of things I was gleaming from it, it's basically kind of like Michael Haneke remake in Funny Games in 2007, because I guess it's basically
kind of like
shot.
Yeah.
It's like a shot-for-shot remake, except like, maybe like two things are changed here and there.
Doing a quick look, I don't see it on my wall here. So I guess I don't. I thought I had it, but I guess not. I've never seen that remake. But the 1971 version from Sam Peckinpah. We decided on this because you had basically given me an ultimatum. We're doing Peckinpah or Peckinpah. which one do you want to do? No, I'm just kidding. You gave me a few different options to
do. Like seven different movies.
You did. I was just joking. But I think
there are only two of them I suggest.
Yeah, there was a couple Peckinpah on there, which is, I just want to point out too, it's just really fun to say his name. It's, you know, Peckinpah. Also, it's probably going to give the AI filter a lot of work to get rid of those plosives that are going to be coming through with saying all the P's.
It sounds like a buddy cop movie. Like, God damn it, Peckinpah. You're a loose cannon out there. Are we all...
He kind of is. You're right. One of the reasons why I wanted to do Straw Dogs is because I actually had not seen the movie, but I know a lot about it. And I know the gist of the ideas in it. I knew that there was a rape scene in it, and of course on Blood and Black Rum Podcast we love talking about rape scenes. We've done that previously in the past on a few different episodes.
One day that'll be on the Criterion version of I Spit on Your Grave 2008. Blood and Black Rum podcast says, rape scenes could have been better.
We love talking about rape. I like the idea too, because this Straw Dogs is really kind of situated, like you said, it has similarities to like home invasion movies, like Funny Games. It has similarities to, in some ways, like folk movies like The Wicker Man at times, because there's that like outsider element to it too, where you go to like this place that, especially for Americans, England,
all this
completely foreign.
Well, hold on, it's not just England, it's Cornwall, which is its own little bit of, you know, weird England.
Completely foreign to us Americans. We have no idea about what these Europeans do. So, that's why I chose Straw Dogs. I kind of wanted to check it out. Like you said too, poster is alluring.
Got Dustin Hoffman.
It's got Dustin Hoffman. You're right. It's got a young looking Dustin Hoffman, a professorial Dustin Hoffman.
He's no graduate anymore. He got his degree.
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much. So yeah, that's why I wanted to do it. You wanted to do it. Had you seen it before?
No, but like you, excuse me. I kind of had like, you know, kind of had an idea what the film was about, and you know,
prior knowledge of it, and
knew it's kind of not so much a sacred cow, but like kind of like a big to do film when it comes to censorship and all that fun stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you're a fan of Peckinpah as well.
I am, but again, admittedly, I haven't seen a lot of Peckinpah, to be honest with you. Mm. You know, I've only seen a couple of films, but the films I have seen, I've enjoyed greatly. So, you know.
You peck and chose Peckinpah.
Yeah. You know. Out of the two films I suggested this and The Wild Bunch, which one day we will do The Wild Bunch on here. Sure. I have seen The Wild Bunch, so you know.
Yeah, we'll do that at some point. So Straw Dogs notably did receive an X rating at its initial screening, and was pretty heavily censored. Well, not heavily. I guess I shouldn't say heavily. It wasn't heavily censored. It's not like, you know, an hour of it or anything like that was cut out. But it was censored by the BBFC because they did not like the rape that took place in it. So that was pretty much the biggest issue of this movie, that, you know, this rape scene, which we'll talk about as we get into the show. So it did receive an X rating at one point. It did get kind of cut down, and then it has been since released uncut, and the uncut version is obviously the one that we watched for this episode. And it has had a lot of recognition as well, of course. It's based on a novel that's actually, I think, probably less recognized than the movie Straw Dogs. It's based on it's called The Siege of Thatcher Farm, I believe.
Siege of Trencher Farm.
Trencher Farm, yeah, by Gordon Williams. And, you know, it's, like I said, it's a lot less known than Straw Dogs. And also Straw Dogs, the title, is based on a Chinese belief system of basically things that are used and then thrown away. It's kind of the idea, because the film never really makes mention of, you know, a literal straw dog or anything like that. It's metaphorical. And this one I actually had to look up, you know, what is the phrase straw dogs, because it's not a phrase that I know. But apparently it is related to the Tao Te Ching in Chinese culture.
But yeah, I mean, after I had to look up too, because, you know, Wikipedia and the internet, you know, like the reason why Straw Dog was chosen for the title is not really utilized in the sense that you'd think it'd be utilized, because coming off that kind of idea of something that's, you know, useful, and then once it's used, it's being discarded. You would think, in this sense, it'd probably have to do something with, like, the rape scene in The Wife, you know, especially thinking back to, like, you know, the 70s and such, you know, where kind of rape's not even like a crime against a woman. It's the crime against the man, either the brother, the father, or the husband, because, you know, they're basically part and parcel. Not how the film kind of goes with that idea. So, or really in general. So it's kind of, I still don't really kind of get the idea behind it, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, the film doesn't ever really draw attention to the fact that, to the title, like the idea of straw dogs. So you're kind of left to ponder the metaphor itself. I mean, I think in some scenario, you can kind of take it as, you know, the ceremonial aspect of useful until it's discarded is, you can see that rape scene. But I think you're right. I don't think that is exactly what is meant by that title. I think there's more to it than that. But again, the metaphor, it kind of eludes me a little bit as to what exactly is meant by that, because I can't say that I gathered entirely what was meant by the title.
No, I think it's more somebody was smoking some pot or drinking some shots of scotch and like, hey, it would be really cool. I was reading this book about Tang Zhao, you know, Taoism and straw dogs.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a cool title, and it definitely evokes some ideas. But again, you're right. Like, for the layman to go and say, like, oh, yeah, Tao Te Ching. like, that's not a metaphor that's really going to be apparent, especially at that time. I would think, you know, that people going to the movie theater would be like, yeah, I subscribe to that philosophy.
You're not right up on your Chinese philosophy.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
I mean, now at least we're able to just go to Wikipedia and be like, what the fuck is straw dogs phrase mean? And that's pretty much what I did.
Well, I never would have even asked the question, but that's just a cool name. And then, like, the fact that it's tied in there, like, straw dogs comes from the Chinese, you know, I would have just been like, oh, yeah, that's just pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's talk about the beer that we have on the show. So you know what that means. I got to go back to my soundboard and play a little transition. That didn't work out as expected.
Wow. You're already two episodes in. The soundboard already broke. Well,
I know. Let me give it another shot. So yeah, I had it turned down.
I love it because it's such a chintzy sound effect.
Well, it is the free one that comes with the soundboard, so it's not like we went through and like added new sounds or anything like that. Yeah, it's a free transition that we get, so can't ask for too much. All right, the beer that we have on the show today, this was a special one. Martin actually went to go get this one with our Fiden's beer mule.
I fought through rain, sleet, and snow and a million people to get it.
You were a mule unto yourself there. So you went down to Fiden's and you actually brought back a number of beers. I think we got 10 in total from them because they had 10 on the menu and 10 it was. So you were.
The one thing I didn't walk away with was a glass, and apparently it's going to haunt me till the day I die.
That's right. At least $100.
$250 actually.
So yeah, we had our pick of different Fiden's beers that we could do, but we decided to do their main new release that they were, you know, that was the flag point of the day that they were, you know, and I think they normally do new releases like this on Wednesdays, which is, let me just say, extremely inconvenient for somebody who works on the weekdays to have to try to go down there at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Wednesday to be like, grab this new release. But anyway, Martin was able to because he doesn't work on the weekdays. So that was nice. But they were releasing a collaboration with Vitamin C Brewing, which is from Massachusetts. Also pretty well known for their IPAs.
Me.
Yeah, not to you. And Vitamin C as in the ocean sea, vitamin.
I was, or the singer, I was waiting for graduation song.
Yeah.
As we go over, we remember.
this is a collaboration between the two, and it's called Ducks and Axes. The ducks for vitamin C, the axes are for Fidens. And the idea is that this collaboration is kind of shared between the two. So I think Fidens released Ducks and Axes, and then vitamin C released Axes and Ducks. Kind of cool, you know. If you want to try both out, feel free to make the trip down to Massachusetts, but I probably won't. This one is a double IPA with Nelson Galaxy, Citra, and Peacherine hops. And honestly, it's pretty darn good. I mean, I think that this is a really solid double IPA. And one thing that we were talking about before the show that I was kind of lamenting about is that while I think Fidens makes a lot of really, really good IPAs, when you get into the IPA territory with the change-ups of hops, I do think that at some point there is something lost in that, like, they all sort of start to blend together a little bit. And for me, that's kind of where Ducks and Axes is. I think it's really, really solid. It's really good. But it's not like I've never had one that was like this before. And I think Sloop is in pretty similar territory. We've had Sloop Brewing on the show before. And
a billion times.
Yeah. And I feel like some of their recent output for IPAs are pretty, pretty darn close to this one in terms of quality and taste. Now, that's not to say that I don't think this is good. I think this is really good. It has a great, like, sort of grassy, grapefruity and somewhat like, you know, stone fruit with the peacherine. I think it's all really solid. It all comes together really well. It's very textured and creamy. But I also have to recognize the fact that, like, while Fidens has been now heralded and people are going absolutely batshit insane about their stuff, and especially this beer, I do think that it is, you know, we're hitting a standard where other breweries are also coming close to that same quality, in my opinion. So I think it's really good. I think there are other brewers that are doing IPAs and double IPAs that are on par with Fidens as well, and with this particular beer. What do you think?
No, I agree. I think it's a damn good, very solid IPA, night, I should say. Really good. It's very fruity, very juicy, nice and yeasty too. It's, you know, I wouldn't be able to pick stone fruit out in the list of fruits for this beer, but it's like your bog standard NIPA, but just like hits every note better. Like, it's a little bit juicier, a little bit fruitier, smoother, crisper. It's a very good NIPA. I like it a lot. But, as you were saying, it is falling kind of into Sloop territory where it's like, and we've been on a Fidens binge of late just because they've been releasing a lot of stuff of late because they're soon moving from their basically little shack out in Colony out to an actual place that they're going to have in Albany. You know, they've been pumping up and releasing a lot of stuff of late, so we've been fortunate enough. And I was fortunate enough for our usual meal. He asked me if I wanted to go. I said, sure. When? And when we went to, we got there early, and we still had to wait quite a bit. And they were supposed to open up at 3. I think they ended up opening at like 2:45 because the line was so long. And it, like, wrapped around the building. And when I asked my buddy that I went with, he says the longest line that's ever been. And the guy that was in front of us, somebody I know from work, he said this, and he goes there often, he says the longest line's ever been, too. So a lot of people were looking forward to this release. It's really good. Is it wait, like, an hour a line? And, you know, wait an hour in line and then bitch on Facebook how you had to wait forever and you didn't get your beer because they made the limit 12 a can instead of like 8. No. It's not that good.
Yeah.
I wouldn't wait that long for like any beer. But it is really good. If you're not from the region, you probably have, and you know about it, you probably had to have some nice shipping for it. But it's really good. I like it's, this is a really good NIPA. Makes me want to try some vitamin C and see what, you know, they do. Because I've never, like I said, I've never even heard of them before. So that meant nothing to me. It was kind of the other releases they had that had me more intrigued. But I am getting to the point where this is why, like, I've been drinking, like, Modelo and Miller High Life and Miller Lite and Jenny on the side. Because I'm getting to, like getting to the point where it's like, all right, I'm kind of NIPA'd out now. Like, everything, everyone's releasing everything. And as you said before we got into the show, they're just tweaking it enough on the margins to the recipe when you see the, all the different hops they have. Like, what if we put the hop here instead of there? Like, you know, three minutes before, what would happen? Like, I'm kind of running out of steam on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, they're good. Like I said, they're really good, but at the same time, it's like, well, it's the same thing with Sloop. As much as I love Juice Bomb, it's like, how many times can you repackage Juice Bomb and call it something different and con me into it? Yeah, and I haven't had a Sloop in a while, because it's like, as good as it is, I'm not going to run out and be like, oh, what's this? And then be, you know, like, oh, it's Juice Bomb, but they add cherry to it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I still think it's really solid. And if that's what you're looking for, you're not going to go wrong with it. It's just that, you know, maybe we're getting to the point where just a little bit over the NIPA craze. Something else. Something different.
I was yelling in the ear in line, too. I was like, yeah, why don't you guys make a white IPA? Wouldn't it be great if a white IPA came back? Don't do a black or red. Those are garbage. Do a white IPA.
Make the white. That's right. All right. Hold on a second. Let me throw a new transition on, and we'll start talking about Straw Dogs.
1971.
Oh, that was pitiful. Come on. Do that again. This one is like another whoosh one. All right. Enough of that bullshit. We got to get better transitions.
You know what? That kind of makes me mad. Why does the Fidens, Ducks, and Axis just have an untapped nice glass with foam, but the Axis and Ducks from Vitamin C?
Yeah, they actually.
Yeah.
They spend the time and they put the photo in there.
Yeah. And why is the Fidens better? I guess, you know, because fuck Massachusetts and those goddamn folks. Pocky Con, have it yet.
All right, Straw Dogs. Got a lot to talk about on this one. First of all, let's talk about the fact that Dustin Hoffman looks like a preacher man. Looks like a nice young Mormon man going door to door.
Hello, can I tell you about, speaking of, not Mormons, but this morning, the Jehovah's came by and left a little note on my door about the Memorial of Christ coming up. I wonder what they mean.
I said, make sure you remember. Yeah, no, but Dustin Hoffman, you know, is one of the stars in this movie. And this movie, too, Straw Dogs, is very, very character-driven. It's very, there's only a few, like, focal characters in this. It's very intimate.
As I say, it's kind of like Rosemary's Baby.
Yep. It does have a familiar feel like that, too. And I like the opening of this movie because, again, that opening kind of has that Wicker Man element to it where Dustin Hoffman, his character, David, is coming into town with his wife, Susan. George plays Amy. I don't know why I worded it like that. I should have gone David comes into a town with his wife, Amy, who is played by Susan George. And Amy's from around there, But Dustin Hoffman's character is not. He's American. And people immediately pick up on that. And there's this outsider element to the film, like, right away, where people are like, the fuck's this guy? This, you know, this professor-looking motherfucker coming into town. And there's a great scene where Dustin Hoffman goes into the town bar and he wants cigarettes. And he just walks in and he's just like, I'll take a pack of cigarettes. And everybody just fucking adores him.
No, American cigarettes.
Yeah, American cigarettes, yeah. And everybody just fucking ignores him. It's great. And, you know, it kind of makes sense, too, because as you go throughout this movie, and I think it's not a bad thing. It's kind of interesting about Straw Dogs, though, that, you know, you start to find out that Dustin Hoffman's character is very much an asshole in the movie. He is not particularly a likable person. And that's intentional, too. We're not supposed to immediately be drawn to him. We're supposed to kind of have this standoffishness of like, do we like this guy too? Like as the main character, is this someone that we want to side with, or are we kind of on the side of the villagers here who are kind of off put by how he interacts with them when he first gets into town? But I like that idea of the outsiderness of it that we get immediately, because it does put you as the viewer in a very, like, awkward predicament, too. What do you think about that, with, the outsider element?
No, I mean, he's just a right proper douchebag throughout the entire film.
There's definitely, the film, this is intentional. Like, it's intentional for us to not, you know, feel a deep-seated connection with his character. But the way that he talks to, like, Susan George's character, especially right at the beginning where I forget exactly what he says, but he basically just tells her like, hey, hold on a second. Like, wait a second here. And like sort of puts her down right away. You're kind of like, oh, this guy's an asshole. You know this? Or do you remember what he says? Oh, that's what it is. It's when she's trying to explain what he does for a living. And she says something like, he studies, you know, astrophysics or whatever she said, mathematics. And he was like, good try, honey. Like, oh, you're such an asshole. You know, he's like thinking, you know what, honey, I know you're not that smart, but it's okay. It's okay. I love you anyway. You don't wear a bra. That's why I love you.
And hate you at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. But I like that. I think the opening's really good because it really sets up a lot of ideas. It sets up the outsider element. It sets up like how people view him outside of it. And it also sets up too the idea that, you know, at least a little bit later on, they begin talking about like Americanization and how it's very violent in America and how people recognize that, like, oh, are you trying to leave America because it's so violent over there? And it sets up that idea that like, maybe it's different over here. You think it's, you know, peaceful over here, and you're coming to settle down over here instead of America, and you're going to have a rude awakening later on. I think that all works really well at the beginning of this movie. And I think, too, Susan George is extremely good in this movie. She is very alluring in this movie. She has the ability to be sexy and flirtatious, and at the same time, very childlike, and that's the intentional element to this movie, that she is, she seems more childlike than David is, because he's very, you know, he's professorial. He thinks he's very knowledgeable. He's
aloof.
Yep. He thinks he's very smart, and he knows what's going on, and he knows how to handle things, and he thinks that Amy is very childish and naive in her ways, and yet we'll find out at the end of the movie, like, maybe David's not very good at handling these situations as well as he thinks he is. So I think all of that gets set up really well at the beginning of this movie. And we have to note, too, this is a nearly two-hour affair. So it's, you know, it's not like we're jumping in and out here. Peckinpah really sets up these characters, and he sets up the lifestyle of those characters and, you know, why they're here and what they're doing. And I think it works really well. You know, the characterization of David, works so well because we do get to see them in their life for a little while, where it's like David is really only focused on one thing, and that's figuring out whatever fucking math problem he's working on. Right? Like, he is constantly in his study just moping around like a gun.
Yeah, like he's fucking Stephen Hawking. Like, I'm waiting to solve, you know, the equation to life or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
He is kind of like, what the fuck, Rosemary's Baby.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I drawing a blank on his name?
Oh, you're talking about John Cassavetes?
Yes, he's like, Hoffman plays his character very much so like John Cassavetes. Guy Woodhouse.
I feel like John Cassavetes, at least in Rosemary's Baby, was more likable because he was at least a little bit more respectable.
I mean from the beginning though, like, he is kind of, like, you're right, he's more respectable to Mia Farrow, but he is again very much like, you know, women, and you know, I just want to get away and do my own thing.
Yeah,
my nice turtleneck.
I mean, and too, like, you can see that element at play, and that's where you're really like, this guy's a fucking dick sometimes, you know, like. Amy just comes in and she's just sitting in his study, you know, while he's working. And he's like, I'm trying to figure, I'm adding and subtracting and I'm doing proofs here.
Don't you have a toilet to clean?
Yes, yes. He's such a dick. And I think, like, honestly, you know, it's great because David as a character and Dustin Hoffman.
Put that in everyone's mind right now. Ryan says, don't you have a toilet to clean to your wife?
just looking at Dustin Hoffman in this movie, you kind of don't, you know, you don't think of it like that.
Would you ever take him seriously? Like, if you were his wife and he's like, why don't you go and clean the toilet? Would you be like, oh, Dustin?
Yeah.
Why don't you?
I know. And that's part of the thing with Straw Dogs, too, is that Dustin Hoffman here is really not imposing at all. And that's part of the problem in the psychological drama of this movie, because ultimately, he really has no power at all in this town, and everybody knows it, like, right away, because there's a great scene at the beginning of the movie, too, where that fight breaks out in the bar, which, as you said, is a pretty ridiculous fight in and of itself.
It's the funniest bar fight you'll ever see, because it's, like, the most limp-wristed, yeah. Oh, I cut myself on a glass, and, oh, I pushed him... gently off to the side, and Dustin Hoffman's like, oh.
Yeah, but there is that moment that I was talking about where Dustin Hoffman, you know, he sees this fight breaking out, and he kind of, like, gets shoved his way over to behind the door where he's, you know, almost cowering. You know, he's kind of finding it amusing, but at the same time, he's kind of cowering away from the fight because that's just not the type of person he is. And it reminds me, too, so the idea of Straw Dogs is feeling like you have power, and yet, for a lot of the movie, David is particularly helpless. Like, he doesn't really know how to handle the situations. He's very awkward in handling issues that arise. His wife wants him to be more assertive, and he has a difficult time doing that. And it reminds me a lot of the Louis C.K. episode in Louis, where Louis goes on a date with a woman and, like, people start, bullying him in the restaurant and bullying the woman, and he, like, can't do anything about it. And she, like, basically leaves him after that because even though she didn't want him to, like, get in a fight, she also felt like it was emasculating for him to be in that situation at all. It's very much how I think, like, Straw Dogs handles this idea that it's very emasculating for David to be in this situation. At the same time, though, as the viewer, we're kind of left with, like, well, what would you do, you know, in this situation where this is a town that's kind of outside of his scope of, you know, what he's used to and what he knows in his life. It does question the idea of masculinity. And to a certain extent, I think that this movie does have an air of toxic masculinity to it. I do think that the Peckinpah ideas of masculinity that do come out in the theme are a bit, you know, a bit toxic to what a man should be.
I'm going to disagree with you.
Okay.
Because I think it's surface level. Because again, I think this is where the whole, like, if you see like a lot of problems that people have with the film is, you know, misogyny, which is present in this film, and, you know, the, you know, over the top masculinity. I don't think it's not glorified, though. By the end of the film, when after we have this hearty standoff and all this violence happen, who's the victor? Nobody. Who's the asshole? Everybody. What's everyone left in? Ruins. You know, Dustin Hoffman at the end of the film is driving off with a fucking Joker grin on his face. I can't see, especially today, how you could watch this film and find what transpires in it to be like, yeah, you know, John Wayne, he's punching him for the good guy. Like, by the end of this film and everything that transpires, it's, I mean, is it toxic masculinity and that everyone's a overinflated testosterone douchebag? Yes. But at the same time, the way the film kind of plays out, I don't see it as a positive portrayal. I don't think Peckinpah was going for that, because I think by the end, everyone looks like a total asshole except Susan George.
Well, and I kind of agree with that. I actually think that it kind of the film has ideas of toxic masculinity, and it goes so far towards the end of the movie that it actually turns up the right way in the, or like the, a good way in the theme. Because at the end, you're totally right. And I knew it was coming. Like, this is a line that you know is coming at the end of the movie. But it was like, you know, when what's his name? The mentally challenged guy that,
Niles.
And
to be fair to this film, they say everyone's name like once, and everyone has the same fucking 70s English bob haircut.
Yeah.
Who's who? I don't know. You know, so yeah. It's like the end saying to you, like, who the fuck is that? You know?
Yeah, Niles. He says he doesn't know his way home, and David, Dustin Hoffman's character, says, I don't either. And I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming. You know, yeah. It was like, that's like one of the lines that you can just see coming a mile away. But it does hit, because you're right. I don't think that at the end of the movie, we're supposed to see the retribution that occurred, the vengeance against these guys, as something that's like something to be strived for, the violence against somebody to be perpetrated because it's justified. You're right. I don't think that's what we're getting. And I also don't see it as Peckinpah saying a man has to protect his homestead. I don't think that's what he was going for either here in Straw Dogs. And to be fair, too, David does not really know about the rapes that occurred. Like, he's totally naive about that.
That whole part, which kind of go into that, which we're kind of getting a little, that whole rape scene is kind of like, what the fuck is it kind of even for? Like, if there's any problem to have with this film, it's not just with like the graphic, because again, when it comes to like rape scenes in films, obviously, especially during this time period, they're trying to explore, like, you know, issues of power and violence and women's consent, etc. This doesn't have anything to do with it, because the rape plays out, and then, like, what's the consequences of it later? Dustin Hoffman's revenge against these men have literally nothing to do with it.
Well,
and then, like, and Susan George's character arc really dies after they leave the church, where she's having the flashbacks. Like, it has literally nothing to do with that. So, like,
my reading of that is the fact that that's why Susan is, I say Susan, that's why Amy is so outspoken about him dealing with this, because him not dealing with it doesn't affect him, right? Like, until the end of the movie, him not having, you know, like, being aggressive or being assertive has really no bearing on anything with him. He might feel embarrassed, but it doesn't really have any impact to him. But at the same time, he is completely naive to the impact that it has to Amy. And part of that is obviously the things that he doesn't know and the things that she doesn't share. But at the same time, we're meant to see the psychological element that's happening with her is that, like, for all the decisions or non-decisions that David makes, they affect her the most. And I think that that's a really interesting dynamic. I don't think the rape is necessary in the way that it's portrayed, especially in the uncut version, because it actually muddles things quite a bit. It has the element of what I really despise with rape.
Which I find it hard to believe. When I was reading like a post on a certain forum like 11 years ago about it, and they're like, yeah, like she like goes from getting raped to liking it. It's like, oh, you missed a point entirely.
Right. Well, I mean, there is that element to it that I think I don't like about this movie is that it does present in some ways the idea that, hey, just rape until she likes it. Because it does give off a confusing element of, does she end up liking it with Charlie? You know, is it something that she's kind of had on her mind that, hey, maybe she wants to get back with Charlie because things aren't really going that well with David? I don't like that, though. I think that that is really muddling the waters, and I think it should have been left a lot more unambiguous that this was not a, you know.
But the point is when you say no, and slap like three different times, and then when he's like five pumps in, and the music shifts, like, it's kind of a moot point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, he got there not through, you know, convincing her like on the merits. He got there through force, which, by the way, too, before he even rapes her, he, like, open hand, not, like, slashed, but, like, fucking, like...
Oh, yeah.
Beats the shit out of her with it. So it's kind of like, you know...
Yeah.
So, like, that whole... I mean, it's a weird twist, obviously, and it's an uncomfortable twist.
Sure.
And... But at the same time, like, to think, like, all you gotta do is slap the bitch around a couple of times, and then, you know, three pumps in, she's like, oh, I kind of do like this. It's nice.
Yeah, I mean...
You know, not the message you should glean from that.
Exactly. You know? I think, you know, regardless of how that comes across, and probably should have been edited a little bit differently, regardless of how it comes across, it still is very disturbing, especially as they revisit it later on when they're attending the church ceremony, and... we see her just kind of like openly weeping while she's thinking about this, unable to get it from her mind, because that's where we really get like the idea like, wow, this is how much it's affecting her, you know, and to a certain extent, that's because there was a double rape that occurred at that time. But I think that like it does work. And I think the rape itself, you know, had it not been so ambiguously presented at times, would have been a lot more effective. I do think that it works really well. And Susan George, like I said, is very, very good in this role at being, she's able to perform a number of different emotions throughout this movie. She's, you know, childish, flirtatious, hurt, revenge driven. She's got all of that down. I think she does a really good job in this movie. So that, you know, like I said, I think that in a certain element, I do see what Peckinpah is saying, you know, towards the end of the movie, that, you know, no one comes out well in this movie. David is obviously never going to be the same again. He did protect the homestead. Does that make him a better person, a bigger man because he did that? Is he, has he grown from that experience? Probably not.
No, he's, you know? he's regressed as a human.
Yeah. So I do think the end of the movie, like you said, is not meant to be like a turn towards fascism, or like you said, the toxic masculinity of it is not meant to be the end all of this movie. The main theme of you know, hey, protect your homestead.
It's hard. I find it hard to kind of come up with an idea. Like, again, maybe again, we're 50 years out now. So maybe back then, like, people were sitting there going, yeah, kick their ass, Dustin Hoffman. Put their head in the bear trap, you know?
I mean, I can kind of see it. I can kind of see where...
But at the same time, it's not like the film ends. He's killed everyone. The cops show up and like, well, we can't do anything about it because you were a good citizen. You stood your ground. And, you know, Dustin Hoffman's like, come on, wife, let's try to rebuild her life. It ends with him driving off psychopathically, like, I don't know where the fuck I'm going either. Like, you know, and like, so like, I find that like hard. Again, like the whole fascism, like, you know, I'm not going to ever say like, go fascism, but like, I can't ever say like this film's, if anything, it's nihilistic. It's just like, again, because everyone's a piece of shit. No one does anything to get better. And everyone just kind of regresses. Like, you know, when and at the end, it doesn't matter who's, you know, in the right and the wrong. I mean, no, because no one is. Dustin Hoffman's a douchebag. And not only that, he's a coward, you know. And then the fine folks of Cornwall are drunk, you know, vagabonds. Yeah, so there's, you know, there's every, at the end of the film, it's like, well, you know.
I find that idea really interesting of the fact that he works so hard and makes all these decisions at the end of the movie, you know, for a child killer at the end of the movie. But he doesn't even know that.
I know, but at the same time, like I don't blame him for that because, again, at the same time, they're all like, oh, you're a child rapist and killer.
Sure.
You don't know that.
Absolutely.
Sure.
No, I totally agree. I think that just that makes the experience all the more interesting to think about, especially after he learns all of that. Like, how is he going to feel after all of that? You know, he went through all of this. I totally agree that, like, it totally makes sense that, you know, it doesn't matter. He, even without all of the facts, you know, they're just going to turn a guy over because they say that he's a child molester or whatever. But it does make the scenario even more interesting that he doesn't know what has actually occurred. I like so the idea about the being a coward too, I think is a really interesting element to this movie because that is where I think the toxic masculinity to a certain extent comes into play because the film kind of takes into account the fact that Dustin Hoffman's character does not know how to do a lot of the things that what we would consider to be a manly man thing to do, right? He doesn't know how to build a garage. They actually even say that at one point. He's like, she says, I think, like, if you knew how to nail nails and stuff, then we wouldn't be in this situation. It's kind of an interesting idea, like, where that's where he's coming from his perspective psychologically at the end of the movie, is that he feels like he has to subject himself to this siege because it is part of being a man at this point. He has to kind of prove himself.
Not only that, I said, yeah, at the end, like, after, because we get Amy's protesting throughout, but like when the siege is going on, he's like, if you don't shut up, I'll fucking break your neck.
No, he is such a dick to her during that siege too. He's like, just go upstairs. And I actually
go,
like,
go to bed. I can't. Do you have any rope? No. If you don't find any rope, I'll fucking strangle you.
I do like too how like people are like slamming down the door, and he's like, just go to bed. It's good. Take a Valium.
What if you can't sleep during that?
somebody's outside.
I don't provide a good enough hole for you to fall asleep during some rebel rousing outside. Come back and I'll.
I know. He is such a dick during that moment, too. Let's talk about, too, that is a great scene where the one guy puts Ghost through the window and he fucking ropes him up in the window with the glass, like, cutting his neck. And he's just like,
that's
like,
beautiful.
The glass is in my neck. And he's like, yeah, I hope it slits your throat. And he just leaves him.
Well, I don't.
Great moment.
No, that is great. Because he, like, has the blade to his neck. And he's like, you fucking move, I'll slit your throat. And then afterwards, after he gets his other hand tied, he's like, what am I going to do? And he's like, well, the glass is on me. He's like, well, if the glass slits your throat, then good.
I know.
Is like, it that's awesome.
It's a great moment. It's a great, you know, man driven to the brink sort of thing. I think Sam Peckinpah really excels at those moments in this movie. He does quiet moments well too, but the ones that really excel are those like action-packed siege moments. Because the siege, I think, lasts like 45 minutes.
Not even. It's like 30.
You think it's 30?
It's like 30.
It's a good chunk of the end of the movie, though. It's the siege itself.
But the problem is, it's not really CG. It's more, like you said, the secondary elements of like Tom being like, I'm going to blow his fucking head off. And then like, you know, Dustin Hoffman as, you know, Amy's yelling like, if you don't shut the fuck up, I'm going to strangle you, you stupid bitch. Don't get us killed. Shut up as I make this little, I'm going to boil some hot oil and, you know.
I think the idea, though, like, it's kind of cool how naively peaceful Dustin Hoffman is in that moment. Like, they're banging down the door, and he's like,
no,
it's okay.
Come on, good.
It won't get through.
He's like, okay. Come on. Well, no, because he's like, come on, guys. I won't allow violence. It's not allow violence in this home. He's like, come on, guys. I won't allow violence in this home.
The tone of voice really makes a difference there.
Come on, guys. Amy, they broke a glass.
Yeah.
You guys better clear out, or
hey, you guys, you probably better clear out before the magistrate gets here.
You just blew the major away. Hey, hear that? Door solid as a rock. They ain't getting through.
That's amazing shot of the dummy getting fucking hoisted by the shotgun blast. It's a slow motion shot of a dummy going flying across the room.
Fucking British Charles Bronson.
The really great shot, though, is when he shoots his own foot. When the blasts it right out. That's a great shot. The other scene that we haven't talked about that I thought was really effective, it's one of the Peckinpah's quiet moments, is when everything's going pretty smoothly. You know, Susan George and Dustin Hoffman are about to get freaky. You know, they're both feeling frisky in bed. Dustin Hoffman's got his nice wife beater on. He's about to tear that off and get.
You don't do jump rope by.
I do not do jump rope, but I probably should start. It looks like a nice wind down activity.
All right, I'm gonna go to bed. Ready?
Yeah, I know. I'm gonna go to bed. Let me do 30 jump rope calisthenics. Yeah, but he goes into the closet and like immediate, like no sting, no nothing. Just, you know, nice quiet moment. Opens the closet, fucking cat hanged on the light string that they have in the closet, just drops down, and then he closes it again. It's a great moment. It's so shocking because it's not really something that you're expecting. They've been asking about the cat, but it's not something that you're expecting, like, right in this moment to see, hey, this cat is going to jump, pop out at you.
It's great, but at the same time, it falls in a trap that all these 70s movies fall. It's the antagonists are psychopaths, just to be psychopaths, because this is the reactionary period. Like, why would they strangle the cat? Why not? It's literally like, that's literally the only reason, you know.
And this film, too, does have a weird hard-on for animal cruelty. Like, it makes a weird point to show Dustin Hoffman just throwing grapefruits at a cat. Like, it fucking doesn't, that is kind of unnecessary in this movie. Like, to have him doing that sort of display. I don't really understand it as to why that occurs in this movie. It's really kind of a weird thing. But you're right. It is not exactly necessary for this movie to have the psychopaths be psychopaths in that regard. Like, there is no reason to strangle the cat just for the shock value of it. I think that the psychological element of seeing them kind of like mocking the family and doing all that, you know, psychologically is enough where we don't need them to actually murder a cat for no reason. Like, it is not really explained, and it's probably unnecessary. But I think it is a good shock technique for the audience, and it's done well in a nice quiet moment where it doesn't have to actually sting and like hit you in the face that like, hey, a cat popped out of the fucking closet. It's a good moment.
I was waiting for Nick McKay to be, help, I'm stealing the cat, and I've been hanged.
Yeah.
That cat, I do feel bad for, because fucking Dustin Hoffman.
That's what I was saying. Yeah, he's throwing grapefruits at it for
no reason. I know, like, what a miserable fucking cunt he is to that cat. Like, I don't like cats that much to begin with, because usually they're overly moody and pain in the ass to deal with. Some of them are nice cats, but, like, Jesus Christ, like, he's, like... Maybe that cat hanged itself. He's like, I don't want to get He's like, I don't want to get hanged. I hit with a grapefruit again for no reason.
I'm done with Dustin Hoffman. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's like, hey, wife, how's your cat doing? Your fucking shitty cat.
I don't know.
How are you gonna get rid of this cat?
I also thought that was kind of weird how he said he was going to set up the guys when he was talking about the cat, and then she brings out the bowl of milk, and then he gets really pissed about that bowl of milk. He's like, you fucking messed up my whole plan of
you didn't you didn't ask about the goddamn cat as I was serving them nice English special bitters.
It's a weird moment because I'm not sure what his plan was, and I'm not sure what her plan was to just put the cat milk out.
Like, well, I think the plan is they're just both idiots. Like, they're both
they just don't know what they're doing.
They're just both incompetent assholes. Like. They go out there and that one lost like the Joker, like, as they're fucking, you know, hammering shingles in and what?
That may be true because I don't know what the plan was, but it doesn't seem like it was either of theirs was a very good plan.
No, it was bad.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, I think it is meant to be like they just don't know how to confront these people, and it's a. You know, I could kind of understand. I'm not a confrontational person either. I'm not an aggressor. You know, but I also can be a sarcastic and dickish person if I need to be. And I think that's where, like, Dustin Hoffman can be a dick, but he's only a dick to people that are, you know, sort of who he feels are, like, weaker than him. So, you know, he's a dick to Susan George, but he can't be a dick because he's a coward to everybody else. So, I don't know. It's definitely a frustrating movie because of that, because you're always thinking, like, why Dustin Hoffman, why can't you just be just a little bit more confrontational? Why are you such a coward in these situations? And then you're like, oh yeah, because that's the point. That's the point of Straw Dogs. The psychological element to it of them not being able to do these things that they need to do to just, you know, set boundaries. That's pretty much all I got. We did a really good job of pretty much staying on topic and moving through all the topics that I really wanted to talk about. Was there anything else that we didn't get to that you wanted to talk about?
No, I think that's about it. Like, I think I hit every nail that I want to, because, I mean, I look at, like you said, like, at the end of the day, like, I, especially now, I don't see how you can watch this film and be like, well, that's fascist. Or you watch it and be like, well, it's overly misogynistic. It is, but at the same time, it isn't. And it's filled with toxic masculinity, but at the same time, it isn't. So, I mean, you know, and I guess when we get to the review part for shit of it, you know, I don't know if it's what, like, again, I think this film's pretty nihilistic. I don't know where you kind of gravitate to, but I think
I agree with that. I think that the nihilism actually comes through at the beginning when the film brings up American Violence, because it brings up American Violence as though that's something that's an offshoot of, like, Americans are so violent, like, other places are not. And then the film presents you.
They even say like the riots and the shooting of the blacks. You won't find that here, will you?
Right. No,
just the raping of white women.
Exactly. And the film presents you. It's like it sets that up. It says, "Hey, it's going to be so peaceful here." And then the film presents you exactly the same scenario in just a different manner. And I think that's where the nihilism comes in. It's like no one is free of violence. It is a part of humanity. And David is going to learn that basically in this movie.
And that is, I think, the ultimate nihilism. And the ultimate nihilism, too, is that at the end of the movie, David asks Amy, he's like, what do you want me to do? Just turn Niles over to these people? And she's like, I don't care what happens to him.
Yeah.
That is the ultimate nihilism. I don't think it's saying fascism. I think it's saying that humans are inevitably violent when they need to be, and that is what the film is presenting. And then ultimately at the end of the movie, it's saying, what do you do with that? You don't know what to do with that because you've just been subjected to something that you really don't know how to process.
Yeah.
I think that's ultimately what Straw Dogs is coming to. And I think that's what Peckinpah meant. And I think there's actually some trivia that Dustin Hoffman thought that the film meant something different. And that's, and he played the end of the film up in a way where he thought that it was actually kind of, you know, saying that, you know, the vengeance was justified, and Peckinpah disagrees with that. So
apparently, from what I've read online, I don't know if it was a joke or what, but Peckinpah allegedly said that David's the villain of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Which you can kind of get on board with. Because by the end, he kind of is.
Yeah, I mean, you can kind of see it to a certain extent. Obviously, it's not like everybody is justified in what they do, but at the same time, David is also his own villain because he does not know when to accept the fact that he doesn't know what the fuck's going on and that he needs to, you know, back off a little bit.
Well, I mean, I kind of agree with that notion because he goes from, like, somebody who presents themselves as above that realm of, you know, fighting, but this, and our main antagonist, you know, the Cornwall assholes, essentially, they're real though, because that's who they are. I kind of disagree with that kind of idea because, again, at the same time, like, whether Dustin Hoffman's pretending to be something that he's not, and then, you know, reaches to a baser instinct, and these people who actually relish in their baser instincts, and that's just who they are, I don't think that separates them at all. I don't think that justifies, you know, one more than the other. They're both, you know, irreconcilable assholes. So, I mean, I think I would say that Dustin Hoffman's regression in this film is more going to anti-heroism than him being a villain.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Yeah.
Because at the same time, they're all terribly insufferable douchebags and terribly insufferable human beings. But at the same time, it doesn't really matter if you were born like that or you got there, you know, through circumstance. You got there.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's pretty much where I fall too. All right, so on a scale of 0 to 10, Schweppes soda siphons, what would you give Straw Dogs?
It's not Schweppes, it's Schweppes.
Schweppes. Schweppes.
No, not Schweppes. Schweppes.
That is a fucking cool soda siphon that they have in that vintage soda.
I was thinking, well, where's yours when you're making?
No,
your
I wish I had one. Apparently, though, they're not made anymore. And even if you got a vintage one, it wouldn't work because they had like carbon dioxide capsules in the siphon. I looked it up too because I was like, that's pretty fucking cool. But what a hearted man from David, who he draws himself like a fucking whiskey and seltzer, and he puts literally like one squirt of seltzer in there. And that's it.
Where's your, where's the hell?
Yes, you lost your train of thought. That's okay. All right, so out of 10 Schweppes,
no,
soda siphons, Schweppes soda siphons, what would you give Straw Dogs?
I give it an 8.5 out of 5. I think it's
an 8.5 out of 5? Oh my God, what a rating.
8.5 out of 10, sorry. I like the movie a lot. I think it's really good. I think Peckinpah does a really good job in this direction. I think it's terrifically well acted. Well, you know, all around, Dustin Hoffman, Amy Summer, Tom Hedden. It's, you know, it's really well done. I think the film is a lot more nuanced than what's going to meet the eye. I think that the violence by today's standards isn't really, it's not really hyper-violent. It has an idea attached behind it. I think at the end of the day, the violence that transpires has meaning, even though the film is incredibly nihilistic. I don't know how you could watch this film today and say that it's like it's fascistic or filled with misogyny, because watching what happens in the film, nothing good happens from that over masculine testosterone laden tirade, and we're not celebrating at the end. It's, you know, mischievous and, you know, everything's burning around him. It's well paced, it's well acted. The rape scene is problematic because it is wanted after it happens, what happens to Amy throughout the film after the church sequence, kind of, not kind of, it does lose the meaning behind it. So the violence behind that and the meaning behind that is totally lost and wasted upon and meaningless. But I think this is a very good film. And I can see why it's controversial, but at the same time, I do think it's pretty tame compared to what's going to come after it. This is a really good film. I like it a lot. It's enjoyable. I did kind of, while sifting about it in the 5 hours between watching it and doing this podcast, I kind of sifted about kind of my thoughts. I'd say probably right now, 8.5 out of 10. It's really good. I love it.
Yeah, I would give it an 8 out of 10. I think it's a really good movie. I think that it has a lot of themes and a lot of conflicting themes to it that has probably made it difficult to parse at times for critics and viewers, especially, you know, with its controversies and things like that. But I think that overall, Peckinpah really does craft a compelling narrative of a psychological event that takes place in these people's lives. And it effectively presents you things that are difficult to evaluate on purpose, you know. I think you are meant to see Straw Dogs in two different scenarios. You're meant to see it as like, well, the retribution is kind of justified in a way. But at the same time, you're meant to see it as like, well, you know, probably shouldn't gone that far. And the film makes you contemplate what you would do in that situation, how you would handle it, if you would be able to handle it. Like, would you be like a David? Would you be more of a coward? Would you be a lot more aggressive? Where would you fall in that spectrum? And then how would you see yourself after what happens? And I think that, like, that's kind of why it's complex and why people have such differing opinions on it. Like, is it fascist? Is it condoning revenge? Or is it saying that's not an acceptable outcome? I think that what it's saying is you should be coming away with conflicting feelings about it. And I think it does that exactly the right way. I think, you know, it presents two characters that have very differing views on how they operate and how they would respond to this type of situation. And both Dustin Hoffman and Susan George do a really good job, and they make you feel very differently depending on like how how you're interpreting their actions in the movie. The one area where I think this movie does, you know, kind of dip down is that the rape scene because it is too ambiguous. I don't think that it should have gone too far into the, you know, rape until you like it sort of thing, because it's a little bit grody. But
it dips into like taboo scene after.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little grody. And to be honest with you, it's disturbing enough without that, you know, because it definitely, it's shot in a way that's, it's great because, you know, you're getting off facial expressions and reactions, and that's great. And if the film wanted cuckolding, you know, that's fine too, but it doesn't need to be a surface level rape at first before the cuckold occurs. I think that that's, you know, that's going a little bit too far. But other than that,
in fact, actually, that would have worked a lot better, I think. And
just, you know, the idea of cuckolding itself
and masculine,
yeah,
like, you know, the fact and if you want to have that argument about, you know, masculinity and, you know, the protectiveness that.
I think that's where it meant to go, but I feel like the rape got in the way. You know what I mean? Like that's, it could have done that, but the rape kind of made that nil.
But at the same time, though, if you did that, if you had it where, like, oh, well, my husband's not servingly serving me in a way that's, you know, fulfilling my needs. And I'm going back to an old flame to have those needs fulfilled. That would be fulfilling a male fantasy of, like, all women cheat and they're lying sacks of shit. And, you know, you need to. So I think making it a rape makes it more justified. As grody as that sounds. Because, again, I think if you make it cuckolding and then if you have it. Again, because the whole rape part, he's completely oblivious and unaware, and doesn't even know that happened. If you make it like cuckolding, and then he finds out then yeah, that's just like a dip into toxic masculinity, and
yeah,
it would be hey, then you'd make Amy a villain for who and for what.
Mm-hmm.
You'd make her a target for who and for what. I mean, I'm not, you know, again, condoning the rape, but I think if you made it more of a cuckolding and then he's getting revenge after the fact, then that's not good.
Yeah. All right, so thanks for listening to our episode on Straw Dogs. Hope you enjoyed that. What do we got next time? Yeah, any ideas? Anything that you want to
remember? I have a million ideas.
I mean, yeah, you shot me a whole bunch of ideas. I don't know. Like, probably we won't go back to back with like an action or psychological thriller movie, but I was thinking we could do. So I have some ideas for the future. I don't think I want to do them like quite right now. But I was thinking we could do, and this is going to be, I don't think you're going to like this, this recommendation after you watch it.
That's how I like the setups always be.
Yeah, no, but I was thinking since Easter is coming up, we could do Night of the Lepus.
No.
Why?
No.
Do you even know what it is?
I don't care.
It's about giant bunnies.
No.
Come on. No. It's topical.
No.
It's not absolutely a good movie. I've seen it once before. I didn't really like it. But
I don't care. He said the same thing about fucking Critters 2. And boy, was it a pile of crap.
All right. How about
taking a Pelham 1, 2, 3?
Here's one. And I think you'll enjoy this one. How about The Lighthouse?
With
Willem Dafoe. Yep.
Yeah.
Because I haven't seen that one. I've been meaning to see it, and I think it would be a good one to do for the show. You haven't seen Robert Eggers' The Witch, right?
No.
Okay.
It has been on my Netflix, which I'll watch for a while.
Which one?
The Witch.
Oh, The Witch. Do you want to do The Witch instead? I would be okay with either one. So
no, we can do The Lighthouse because I've been meaning to want to do it. So
I just didn't know if you wanted to start with Robert Eggers' first or if you wanted to do The Lighthouse. It's up to you.
No, we can do The Lighthouse.
Okay.
But The Witch, I think it's on Netflix, and it has been, unless they took it down. It was on my list for a while, that VHS.
Okay. All right, so we'll do The Lighthouse then. I thought that might be something that would be up your alley that you might want to check out.
Oh, no, it's a queer romance.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting to talk about, and I haven't seen it myself, been on my to-do list, so let's do that one.
Lighthouse. This is our Parasite for this year.
That's right.
Our Oscar bait.
All right, so if you want to hear us cover The Lighthouse, you should go to any podcasting app that you can think of and subscribe to us. Whatever you use, we're on it. Give us a nice review on there as well. Appreciate that. We're on Facebook and Twitter. Search for us on there, Blood and Black Rum Podcast. Give us a like or a follow. And you can email to us. What?
Sorry to interrupt, but you know, well, we need to bring back coming up soon.
What's that?
Our Difficult Films Month.
Oh, Difficult Films Month. I was also thinking we could bring back a staple of The Moon is Dead World. Remember that blog that I used to have?
I do.
I used to do Kaijun, where we do kaiju films. You could do the Godzilla films, Mothra. That would be a little bit fun, too.
Wouldn't that be great to do Godzilla with Bryan Cranston, where the film falls apart after he dies?
Yeah. Where was I? You can email it to us as well. Let us know what you want us to cover on the show. We'll take that into consideration. And finally, you can donate to us on our Patreon page or on our anchor.fm page. Anything that you donate will go back towards beer, so we appreciate that in advance. Tune in for us next time for an episode on The Lighthouse, where we get all queer and stuff. And until then,
take care. See ya!